Hello, I'm Rob Watson, and this is a Spotlight on Arts programme. And today I'm in the basement gallery at Leicester Adult Education Centre on Beaver Street. And we're here with a group of artists who are exhibiting, performing at the Intangible Labour exhibition. And what we're going to do is we're going to have a conversation about the exhibition. It's still on for another few days. And we're going to have a conversation about it and the role of independent art, particularly around here in Leicester and around the region, Loughborough, other places as well. So I'm going to start off by asking Miffy, who's the curator, driving force behind this exhibition. Tell us a little bit about it, just so we, you know, what's the headline?
We are a working group of artists, some of whom are neurodivergent, all of whom have adverse life experiences. We share common threads that I've curated the show around, calling the work the new folklore. So we're talking about marginalised voices and more peripheral art practices. So Paul, for example, has come up from the streets and from a graph background. Did you want to take over, Paul?
That's correct, yeah. People class me as a transitional artist, moving away from graffiti in the streets and now doing a bit of that, but a lot of fine art type work as well. Using oils and acrylics, mainly.
What's it been like? And so we're joined by, I've got everybody's names written down, hopefully I get everybody's pronunciations correct. So we're joined by Emma Pierce.
Yep.
Alison Woolcott, Paul Dexter, you just heard from, Francis Ryan, yes, correct, good, that's good, I was a guess, Miffy Ryan and Mark Murphy. So we're going to kind of have a chat. What's it been like using this space for an exhibition, and have you seen any reaction from people? Has anybody, have you picked up any comments or any kind of feelings? What's the vibe been like around the exhibition? I can see that Alison is pulling a face, she's got something to say.
I'm pulling a face because I'm not from Leicester, so right, okay, that's cool. Actually been here. Unfortunately, I had a back injury when the opening evening was on, so I couldn't make it.
So this is your first impression?
That's why I'm pulling a face. So this is my first time seeing the exhibition, but we have exhibited here recently as well.
So what's your first impression?
We've filled the space. I think that my first impression is, wow, what a lot of work Miffy and her crew have put into putting everything up. I think you've got to spend time here. You've got to spend time looking at all the images, and without any curational language, I think I love that. I love the fact that you can stand and you're not sure who the artist is. You're not sure maybe who's in the images, but you can create your own narrative.
So it's very, from the point of view of somebody visiting, it's quite part, it demands that you participate and construct.
Absolutely.
Your journey through the exhibition rather than being told,
yes,
what you should think about it.
Yes, there's no curatorial language at all and no artist names next to the work, and I find that really intriguing because that's what you expect when you go to a gallery when there's imagery on the wall.
I'm just going to give the listener a bit of context because we've got lots of people walking in and out and they're all going to classes. This is the Adult Education Centre and it's quite lively, which is really great. I'm going to come to Emma. And which is your work and how do you think it's been?
Well, my piece is over on the far and it's called Labour of Love. It's a ring. Well, it looks like a ring. It's a hex knot with a diamond in it. And it comes from, my practice stems from women working in male-dominated fields. I grew up in a working-class house. I was surrounded by DIY and very, like, driven in that. And the whole thing feeds in and out. And how that painting came to fruition was thinking about how, well, love in itself is a labour, and the whole ideal of partnership and marriage, as well as like the domestic side and the actual work side, work-life balance, and like how like relationships can change as well. And it's so, there's so much throwing. And it's like I love to find that within that sort of field.
So I'm going to turn to Mark now. Your exhibition here?
Yes, it's a kind of rework of a bunch of autobiographical Facebook posts that I turned into a text, an image. So they're not found images, but they're sort of found images because they're not. I didn't take them. My family took them of me, a lot of them against my will.
And
the expression on my face in some of the photos. So it's trying to catch certain... I recently read a book called Flesh, which kind of concentrated very much on masculinity and how things kind of accidentally happen to men in terms of how they actually grow up, especially sexually, that people do things to them, so which is not the standard narrative. So older women or more experienced women essentially take advantage of the character within the book Flesh. And this kind of rang a bell with me. So as and I'd had a lot of grief recently losing my family. So it was that had actually cast me back to thinking about those kind of teenage years and what happened to me. And so I kind of constructed into a narrative using photos that my family had taken of me, and then kind of like re-remembering kind of the events that happened from when I was like 15 to 16. But then what's been interesting is actually watching people actually read the text, because obviously it's the only text piece in the exhibition. And I was kind of like a bit worried that it was a bit dense, but people have actually kind of like taken a long time actually following the story and the narrative.
Somebody separately mentioned they'd read your pieces and there was something had stood out about them, about how you were getting inundated with attention, something like that, about from girls. And it was like, you know, that was, that, I know, remembering, we're probably a similar age, and remembering that was, for me, it was an off-putting thing. But for you, it might have been a, like kind of a, well, your swagger goes.
Well, no, very, very much not. It was terrifying. I attracted attention of girls way while I was playing with little soldiers, you know, so, and had teddy bears. So, but I think that's kind of like very much, that's very much what happens to most people that age. I think that's a lot of girls' experience as well. You kind of attract, you're half and half. Your body's doing one thing and it's way ahead of your brain. Whereas me, my brain was way ahead of my body.
I'm going to throw a question to Miffy, and Francis might not want to listen to the answer to this, but girls can be at 14, 15, 16, 17. Girls are ruthless. My experience was hunted in packs. I've got two sisters. So you'd get the bus to school and their friends would be absolutely ruthless in chasing after what they wanted, and they'd be brutal about it. Men, some young adolescent men sometimes don't stand a chance. Everybody thinks masculinity is this great kind of performative thing that everybody does and it's rock solid, but actually it's not. And it's like young women can really, everybody's nodding heads, is that true?
I've worked with Mark for a couple of years now. He's part of my masking group. And I was following his posts where he kind of mined these experiences on Facebook, and we got talking off the back of it. And on Facebook, and I kind of became his unofficial and unwanted editor, which it almost started as a bit of a joke. I kept like sending him little messages or like queries about the work or stuff, but it kind of almost developed like as I started curating around the work. And originally when it was posted on Facebook, he was presenting it as the Ballad of Sexual Ineptitude. So Mark's a really good writer, but it's all quite self-depreciating in tone. And when we installed the work, we've put it quite low rather than at traditional eye height, and we've put a line of small primary school chairs along the works, so you can get back down to that childlike level and engage with his work on that basis. And what I find interesting is how it takes, even through this conversation, it's taking us all back to that place. It's really transportative, as well as, I think, really important and challenging work, because it's really opening up that male identity and male sexuality. So it's really important work for me to curate.
So you're listening... open your microphone. You're listening to Spotlight on Art with me, Rob Watson, and we're here today at the Adult Education Gallery discussing the Intangible Labour exhibition. I'm trying to think of an open question which anybody can jump in on, which is this exhibition, my impression of it is it takes a very independent view. So it's kind of the process of putting the exhibition together doesn't follow the usual path of like the bureaucratic technical process of putting together art exhibitions that's become pretty much dominant everywhere. What's the benefit of that in your experience, having exhibited and done things elsewhere? I mean, Paul, maybe you might have a thought about that, because the way your work moves from the street into the gallery now.
Yeah, I still do things which really I was doing nearly 40 years ago, doing them, I think, better than I was doing them then. With the fine art, I started really getting into about 25 years ago and doing things like still lifes, landscapes, urban landscapes, and illustrative work. But people do see a crossover in the things I do, whether it's the colours I'm using or the compositions themselves. There's often a strong figurative path going through what I produce, and I try and improve each time.
Francis, you were nodding your head quite vigorously then about what was... How does what Paul was saying resonate with what you've seen of his work?
I can see that crossover that he's talked about with the graffiti and the sort of your bright colours and everything. I just love the, you know, a lot of his work is using complementary colours, for example, orange and blue. And if you're an artist, you kind of understand... how to use colours that sort of bounce off each other, and that's one of the sort of techniques with colour that is very successful, really.
Now, this is the second time we've ever met.
Yeah.
But what I know about you is that you carry your flute everywhere. That's the impression I have. Is that true? What do you think? So you add an additional dimension to this in terms of music, which for this environment, we've discussed this previously, about it's kind of alien to this space, whereas it used to be a library, it's an art centre, it's a multi-purpose centre, but music seems to be missing. What do you think? I love listening to the acoustic of you practising and warming up with your flute. What do you think it adds?
Well, it draws people in, doesn't it? Because they're sort of looking and thinking, oh, what's going on down there? And then they might sort of actually look over the top balcony, or when they come down the stairs, you know, people are smiling and nodding and coming up to me and saying, that's lovely to hear. So I think the experience for a lot of people of actually hearing live music is maybe not a very common one. So to have, you know, for me to be able to play my flute in this environment is quite special.
I mean, for me, curatorially, Miffy talking again here, it is important because we're talking about things that have come from the street into a more contrived space. So my mum, Frances is my mum's performance of the flute playing and the casual improvised way it occurs in the space is reminiscent of busking, of folk music practices, which is again really important for the curation of the show, the intangible labour of the show. And really helps to bring home that message. And also because I'm a neurodivergent curator, I like to appeal to different senses, not just the visual. So for me to have things in the auditory realm present in the space is very important. And I, as much as possible, don't like to work with audio-visual stuff. I like things to be live, to be present. So the fact that the music isn't a recording and that it's being performed live is very important to my curation.
So we're thinking about art in general, but we're particularly thinking about independent art. And I'm going to ask, I think I'll go round the table for this question, in terms of how important, Emma, do you feel that independent arts are, that outside of the system? Is that where you work? Is that what you're drawn to? Do you, what's your relationship with, if you like, mainstream organised art?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Right, okay. That provoked a reaction, didn't it? So.
Yeah, so thinking about, well, how these big corporations very much monetize off like artists, and I feel like they, if they don't, oh my gosh, I've lost my train of thought.
The outside the organized structures.
Yeah. When they, how they monetize and make profits compared to, like, it still keeps artists relatively poor unless you are very much in the big leagues and your big galleries, you know, they will take like 60% commission if you sell something through them. So you need to be moving quite a lot of work to actually get somewhere. And then you yourself, I feel like you then lose touch of what your art is and like how it comes about, and that for that the passion behind it, then just you become a machine just churning stuff out instead of actually putting love into it. And that's something what I really try to go against now, but that's also capitalism.
Alison, your work, how do you describe it, and what's your business, what's your business plan? No, I don't mean that. I mean sarcastic.
Wow. Being a creative, I've always got about 10 business plans in my head at once. I mean, I think we all have. You know, I think that a lot of our creative mind is so busy, and it's really difficult to stop and travel down one road before we diversify off to another. So my artwork fluctuates. It's fluid. It used to be installation art. I'd happily fill a room and ask people to look at experiences in a different way, and just take time to look at the work and think, okay, yeah, that could resonate with me in some way. More recently, I've been working with Miffy on performance art, which is something I'd say new, but it's been years now, isn't it? We've been working together. So the image that we have on the wall here is taken from a performance that I actually did in private, because I was naked at the time, so that was a private exhibition at home, but it formed part of a large installation of a solo exhibition that I did at a gallery in Burton-on-Trent.
And do you find, which do you prefer, which mode do you prefer, the kind of I was listening to think about the left-hand path and the right-hand path, have you heard that? Which is, so which would you describe, you, are you on the left-hand or the right-hand path? Which one's which? I can't remember which one's which.
I've never heard about these paths.
It's the idea that I think the right-hand path is the kind of structured, you follow the path, you keep, you know, you have a sequential order, everything's ordered, but the left-hand path is the more exploratory and...
I'm very much to the left.
I would imagine, I'd kind of assume most of us around this table are, I mean, I am literally left-handed as well. Is anybody else left-handed?
No,
there we go. I'm the only one, so.
I think I'm repressed left-handed.
Go on, Mark.
I was just going to say that part of the masking group that we did with Miffy, then that involved a kind of intergenerational performance, set of performances at Two Queens. And it was really nice because it was a welcoming way of actually meeting other performers and actually having a relationship with the curator. I mean, I've had something shown in LCB, but that was a very anonymous, send a piece in, get it judged, get it accepted, somebody puts it up for you, you just deliver it at the front desk kind of thing. So whereas the kind of stuff that we did at Two Queens and also here, it's like, you know, I came in and blue tacked everything to the wall in the morning, you know? So it's kind of, and then ran down the shop, so.
Yeah, I think it was, when we did performance before, I think with Miffy, it was more of a, I'm doing this, come and join me. It wasn't, you know, I find a lot of, talk about social media briefly, I find a lot of requests for open arts, come and join us, send in your work. Like we were just talking about a moment ago, it's send in your work, but it's £35 per piece, or it's £20, and then we'll decide if we want your work. And I do feel that this is happening a lot more, and galleries are asking artists to pay before they're even chosen to exhibit.
So the monetization, you're listening to Spotlight of Arts with me, Rob Watson, and I always say art or art, I never know which one's the best way to say Spotlight and Art, and we're talking about independent art practice, and actually we're getting into some really interesting stuff about monetization and the use of social media to and business models, and I think in many ways they kill art. And what we haven't got is an environment. What do you think we need, Paul? What would you like to see? Describe, because you exhibit in Loughborough, you're part of a group in Loughborough. What kind of supporting culture do you want around you? And I mean culture in the sense that, you know, you something from which you can grow something. What do you want as an artist that actually gives you support to do the work you want to do?
I share a studio and gallery space in Loughborough known as Studio at 17. We're celebrating our 30th anniversary this year, and it's a place for about 20 years now I've been using as a studio, and it's sort of become a home as well, I guess. Regards galleries, I've approached a gallery in Nottingham and London last year, two galleries. I'm still waiting to hear about that. People might think, well, just doing it for the money. I'm not. It was said at school when I was about 16 that I was capable of going on to make a living, make a decent living, which is something I'm still striving for.
Emma wants to jump in.
Yeah, I think like just funding, like, how inaccessible funding is. So looking at things like Arts Council, your DYCP, and all that. And was it in Ireland where they've just started paying artists? Isn't it like it's only like €350? I don't know where. But you know, that's still like that can cover a rent of a studio space and some extra. And I think giving more financial like security and some sort of structure can really help like artists actually like pursue and have a bit more confidence about themselves, to at least, because I feel like a lot of people just they're so unsure in just starting.
Miffy, I was going to ask you in terms of bringing people together, because this
can
is...
I just do a hook line?
Go on then.
Okay, so we're talking about the intangible labour of being an artist, the amount of time and effort it takes to get funding, the amount of times you get ripped off. It's almost like being scammed. Pay £20 to send a painting to something that you might probably never hear back from, you know. So this is all intangible labour. The days, the hours, the nights lying awake, the crushing blows of the rejections constantly is all intangible labour.
So my question to you, which is a perfect feed through from there, is what's the alternative? And it seems to me you've brought a group of people together.
There is always
an alternative, but you've brought together a group of friends. You've formed a network.
No, we've made friends through this.
Through
we've become
process.
A community through this process.
But that's different from if you were You're not going to networking events. You're not going to business development. You're avoiding all of those things that
I'm very neurodivergent. I have social anxiety. To network or go to private views, in the past, I had to get hideously drunk, and then I'd normally end up making a fool of myself anyway. So it never worked. I'd wake up the next morning maybe with a black eye or whatever. You know, having got no further apart from having been banned potentially from another venue.
Now, so. Emma's going to tell us some stories about you now.
No. Me and Miffy have only just met like through this show, but I can speak on that. At my MA show, we had one of the curators from Icon, and I was blackout drunk talking to her about some cat collars that we sell in the shop at the university. And because I was just so on edge, you know, it's like, oh, this could be something if I get on with this person. And
Emma, Saatchi never saw my work because I was too hungover to open up the room my show was in when I was at Goldsmiths. That's my claim to fame.
Right, so we're through to the final section now. Time goes very quickly. So, Mark, you have a point that you want to make.
Yeah, I mean, it's coming from a working class background, then I always find it very hard to actually deal with people in galleries. I mean, even when I was doing an MA with the London Consortium in kind of 10, 15 years ago, and I'd go out to see my friends' openings, and the bouncer wouldn't let me in if I went to the West End. You know, if I actually went to kind of like a talk with an artist, then afterwards, it would be very much, what are you doing here? It's as though they could smell it on me somehow, you know, where I came from. So, I mean, I've got a first-class degree in art history from Leicester University, you know, but you listen to my voice and that doesn't give that away very well, you know. So there's this, and the way that I look kind of like as well doesn't fit in with the normal kind of like...
And that's kind the of things that are expected.
Well, I went to, some months ago, I went to a networking and grow your business event at Nottingham Central Library. And honestly, it was spreadsheets and sort of things like this. And I just thought, and how to kind of advertise yourself on social media. And if you do this, you're bound to get success. And I just couldn't really relate to any of it. I just came away thinking, no. Because basically, I just want people to sort of look at my work and see my work and give me sort of feedback. Then and there, I don't want some, you know, anonymous, I don't know, thousands of people on Facebook or whatever. It doesn't really mean much.
Yeah, to add to that, I think also with those sort of network, they aren't suitable for arts. They aren't, and they're not, like, they don't network, well, they don't, the business sort of, they just see everything as a business, here's a product, sell it, whereas art is nothing like that, and I've never really come across one that's very suited to art. And but then also you sort of have to run your art like a business, but then it takes away from the making. It's such a flip-flop all the time.
Yeah, I wanted to add to that that a lot of us here probably might not make commercial art, and I think a lot of those courses are for people who do make commercial art, and I have artist friends who do purely paint all day and sell, you know, all over the world. And I know they've recently been paying for assistance on Instagram, and it's daily work, and it's hard graft for them. Whereas I think a lot of us here would prefer perhaps to be in a gallery space and to be with other artists and, you know, discussing our artwork rather than sitting on Instagram.
So in the last couple of moments we've got about a minute left. I'm going to do a quick fire round. What would be your ideal situation that you would like to be part of in terms of a community of artists in the region, in wherever?
I just like this to get bigger. Like this sort of like community. I feel like Leicester has a very like good, this isn't going to be quick. This Leicester's a real big like community, but it's hidden. And I feel like you have to really find it. And I feel like how we are, I feel like this needs to grow more. I want more. Give me more.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a privilege actually to be in a city, because I'm a country bumpkin. And to be part of something and come into a city and exhibit and to be kind of pushed out my comfort zone as far as performance is definitely the way forward for me.
Paul?
I'm surprised now just how big the graffiti scene has become in Leicester. You can't walk around the centre without, sorry, the centre of the city without seeing mural after mural. And as well as that, the underground movement of the writers is rife. People are doing things here and there that were never done 35 years ago. So, yeah, that's impressive.
Francis?
To be able to exhibit in a space like this is amazing, and to see other artists' work and also be able to talk to them about their ideas, development of their work, etc. Those are important things to me, and also being able to play my flute in this space is amazing. And I must say, actually, that it's really kind of the first time I have wandered around in a space like this and improvised. Up to now, my flute playing has been largely, you know, sort of sheet-based or reading music from, reading music. So it's very freeing and liberating to do it like this.
I'm going to come to Mark, and then Miffy will get the last word. So,
I think it's quite inspiring to have kind of DIY kind of ethos behind the whole thing. So if you're not getting the kind of attention from galleries, or you're not enjoying the kind of attention that would get you, then to actually kind of like come together as a community or whatever you want to call it and actually just do it yourself.
So in essence, the last word would probably be that art is always bigger than just being about art, and so the intangible labour, the engine, the fire, the passion behind this is about community building and forming friendships in essence, and that makes it, the show, feel very joyful and very accessible. And it's lovely to see people drift through the space, maybe just latch onto one thing and engage with that and drift on. So people aren't necessarily doing that, oh, I've got to go round and look at all the works kind of thing, because there's no map, there's no explanation or instructions. So it's letting people make their own desire paths through the space and encounter it in the way they want to, which is lovely as well.